All right, welcome to the Free Stretch, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford, Week 4 edition, here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton. We're back on the back porch again. This time it's daytime here on an early Thursday afternoon as we get set for Sunday's game against the Rams. Another late kickoff, and that's fine. I've been enjoying the 4 p.m. plus kickoffs, although I didn't enjoy the roughly 7:15-ish p.m. ending on Sunday, as none of you did either. And by now, obviously, we all know how that went when the Buccaneers lost to the Giants, 32-31. We're going to talk about it today. There's good things and bad things about doing this show later in the week. You know, you don't get the instant reaction to whatever happened on Sunday when I do these podcasts on Thursday. I almost did an emergency Monday show for this one. But in a way, I'm glad. I think it is better because with a couple of days, you get a chance to calm down a little bit. You get a chance to see the game through more even eyes. You know, the things I would have said had I done a show Sunday night or Monday are different than what I'm going to say today. Although the overriding principle is the same. And that is that I'm just really, really disappointed. Not necessarily in the players. I mean, certainly mistakes were made. The defense needs to lock down a lead that size. I don't care what else happens with missed kicks or poor decision-making or anything else like that. When you have a halftime lead like that, the defense needs to make it stand up. So I'm disappointed in that. I'm obviously disappointed in Matt Gay for missing the kick. I'm disappointed in the offense for not converting in the red zone more. On and on and on. But I'm really disappointed in Bruce Arians. And I'm not anti-Bruce Arians. I'm still as pro-Bruce Arians as I have been. But I'm really disappointed in how preventable that loss was just with better decision-making. You know, it's one thing when you just can't help it. You just get beat. Somebody else was better than you. Somebody else made one more play than you. You came up short. Happens all the time. It's happened in all three of the Bucs games this year. The one they won against Carolina where they were just a little bit better than Carolina. It happened against the 49ers where they just, you know, failed to make a few plays when they needed to. But Sunday against the Giants is on Bruce Arians more so than any of those other games, win or lose. And we'll talk about that on the show today. So thanks for joining us. The Free Stretch, as always, is brought to you by Bill Curry Ford, our good friends who have something no one else has going on. I tell you about it every week, the nationwide lifetime warranty that you get when you buy any car from them, whether it's new or pre-owned. So you get unlimited years and miles as long as you own the car. It could be 4 or 5 years from now. You buy a car from them, the engine blows, something happens, you take it back to Bill Curry Ford, and they'll get it taken care of for you, which is, to me, I mean, I would pay more for a car just knowing I had that, but then considering all prices being equal or better, which is what you're going to find at Bill Curry Ford, with their completely transparent online pricing, I mean, it's a no-brainer. That lifetime warranty is a big, big deal. Plus, you get a year of free service as far as oil changes and things like that. Bring it in after you buy it. Plus, 10 years of roadside assistance. It's all there. Go to the website, BillCurryFord.com. It's C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. Or check them out in person a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. So, again, it's Thursday. It's been a few days. I'm not going to go nutso over Sunday. A lot of people have already done that. Podcasts on this very website at JoeBucksFan.com have done that. People you follow on Twitter have done that, including me, which you can get me at Bobby Gameday, BobbyGameday, or you can email me, BobbyGameday@Yahoo.com. But I will say this before we look ahead anymore, because, again, what pisses me off the most is just how preventable it all is. So the Buccaneers, you know, they got to this big lead. Everything was going great. 18-point-plus lead at halftime, which is only the 24th time now, or 23rd time in franchise history that's happened. It seems like it'd be more, but 18-plus point halftime leads are not easy to come by, no matter how good you are. And so, things don't always go that well the whole game. I get it. You know, you're up by 18 at halftime, doesn't mean you're going to win the game by 30 or 40. Things tighten in the NFL. I expected that. That's fine. I mean, again, I'm not going to go nuts about that. But you had chances to end the game. And you did things that the other team was hoping you would do. And this is what always gets my goat. And it comes down again, like so often it does, to how badly do you want to end this on your terms right here, right now. And the teams that succeed are willing to do that. And you have to take a little bit of a chance to do it. Not a lot, mind you, but a little bit. And the teams that aren't willing to do that, that are scared to do that, often find it comes back to bite them. So, 6 minutes to go in the game. At this point, the lead has narrowed considerably. Okay? It is 28-25 after being 28-10. And again, that happens. But the Bucks, after that, you know, initial flurry early in the second half where the Giants scored a few quick points, things had slowed down. There had been a few punts on both sides. So now the Bucks are driving. They're driving. They get down inside the 10. And the red zone offense, once again, absolutely kills them. 27% now after this Giants game. That's 31st in the NFL. Only the Dolphins are worse, and they're worse at everything. Bucks were 1-for-5 on Sunday getting a touchdown. This is their red zone touchdown percentage, not their overall scoring percentage. Bucks were 1-for-5, okay? But the fifth one, 3rd and 2, you're on the 5-yard line. You score a touchdown, you win. You get a first down, then you're probably going to get a chance to score a touchdown and win. And even if you end up kicking a field goal after that, it's after 4 more downs of and goal situations, and you've run clock even further. Point is, 3rd and 2. They had run the ball 8 times in a row to this point after the interception by Jameis, which was a bad interception. But again, here's another thing. You think, I mean, Bruce Arians knew this going in. Byron Leftwich knew this going in. Jameis played a hell of a game on Sunday. The interception was terrible. That, it's going to happen, okay? I mean, I'm past the point of trying to make excuses. I'll get mad when he throws too many of them, but you're going to get a play or two like that a game, period, okay? If you can't handle it, get a new quarterback, but if he's your ride or die like you say he is, then just that will happen. And in order to get all the good things, which you are getting, he's played very well, okay, the past 2 games, you're going to get a couple of those. Screw it. Go right back at him and throw. You can't coach scare. You can't try and coach around Jameis Winston. Except a pick or two, it's him. But anyway, at least to their credit, after that pick, they ran the ball like 8 times in a row and ran it well. I mean, they got yards. They drove it all the way from midfield after the fumble recovery. After the Jameis pick, then they had a fumble recovery. Then they drove it all the way down the field from midfield to get into goal line situation. That was all in the strength of running the ball. Fine, it worked. Great. 3rd and 2 there, though. I thought would have been a good time for play action or something like that, or a pass. But even that, I'm not going to crucify him for running the ball. They didn't get it, okay? So now it's 4th and 2. You're up 28-25. This is a moment. This is one of those moments, okay? So I keep telling everybody, and it's not me saying this. It's math saying this. This has already been studied and backed up. These aren't opinions. These aren't hunches. These aren't gut feelings. These are numbers, okay? So you're up 28-25. A touchdown ends the game. The game is over if you score a touchdown, like, for all intents and purposes. Now, who among us wouldn't want to have a chance to win the game and just get in 2 yards, and you're probably out of there? And that's it. You know, and if you don't get it, it's not like you automatically lose if you don't get it and win if you get it, and you have to decide what's more likely. You cannot get it and still be in pretty good shape, but if you get it, you definitely win. And they kick a field goal on 4th and 2 from the 5-yard line with a chance to win the game. Now, if I'm the Giants, or if this happened to the Bucks, if you reverse the roles, this is how you always know what you ought to do, is think about it from the other guy's perspective, and what's he rooting for you to do? Because I'm scared to death if I'm the defense there. Oh, man, they're going to go for this 4th and 2. We're going to be down by 2 scores. We're done. I'm praying maybe they'll kick it. And then we're down by 1 score now, and if they make the field goal, we're still just down by 1 score. And then we get the ball down 1 score. Like, that would be awesome. That's a great end game for us, is what I'm thinking if I'm the Giants. That is exactly what happened. This is the field goal Matt Gay did make. He hit it. They went up 31-25. Now, listen, when a field goal changes it from a 1-score game to a 2-score game, that's completely different. By all means, kick a field goal. But when a field goal merely changes the nature of the score that's needed, they're up 28-25, making it 31-25 means you need a touchdown instead of a field goal. I guess that's a little better. I mean, I know that's a little better. But is it really that much better? It's still 1 score. And what's more, now you're forcing the other team to use all 4 of their downs, whereas if the Giants were just down by 3, let's say the Bucks went for it and didn't get it, and the Giants are just down by 3, 28-25. Now on 4th and goal, when Daniel Jones ran it in untouched with nobody within 30 yards of him, quarantined, as Mick Hubert, the voice of the Florida Gators, would say, on that play, they would have stopped and said, well, let's just take the field goal and tie it. You know, they actually would have been helping us. But you gave them reason to be more aggressive and use all four of their downs. I cannot stress this enough. Use all four of your downs, okay? You get four of them. And there are times when you want a field goal anyway, and then great, use fourth down on a field goal. But when you really need a touchdown just to end something, use all four downs to get it. Your chances increase immeasurably. Actually, it's not immeasurably. It's precisely measurable in win percentage or win expectancy, I should say. And by the way, I know people poo-poo the win expectancy charts. I do it too sometimes. But upon making the field goal to make it 31-25, the Bucs' win expectancy went down, which tells you all you need to know. So they kick it there and make it 31-25. First down would have ended the game. So this is something that when I say I'm disappointed in Bruce Arians, that's what I mean. No risk it, no biscuit. We're going to take it to him, blah, blah. All the cliches, all the crap from camp. Remember back in camp when I was sitting there doing my show saying, hey, this is all we have to talk about right now, so we're going to talk about all these dumb quotes and things like that. But in reality, none of this matters until things actually matter, which is now. Now that things actually matter, he's coaching like an uber conservative, you know, out of the 1980s or 1990s, you know, close to the vest, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. Let's let the defense win it, blah, blah, blah. Screw that. You got the ball in your hand and 2 yards to win. You kicked a field goal. You left the door open. So the Giants actually didn't score right away. Bucs stopped them. They punt it back to the Bucs. So we're still in pretty good shape now with a few first downs, maybe even just one or two first downs. And then we have it happen again. The Bucs got close. They got to within 1 yard on third down. It was brought up a fourth and one. This time they're at their own 31-yard line. It's fourth and one. And this time there were a little over 3 minutes left to go in the game. Once again, Giants are out of timeouts. I mean, it's not looking good. So you go for that one. This is only 1 yard, not 2 yards, and you get it. And again, the game is over. I mean, you win the game right there. If you're the defense, are you thinking, oh, yeah, we're going to get this stop on fourth and one? No. Fourth and ones are converted at an extremely high rate. It's over 70% of fourth and ones that get converted. It's only a yard. It's very hard to stop a team to get 1 yard. And you have a chance to do just that to win the game. Fourth and one. I don't care that you're on your own 31. People have told me, because I said this to my friends while we were watching it, and I had some people on Twitter. Oh, Bobby, then there were Giants are already in field goal range to tie the game if you miss. I don't care about that. You could be on, maybe if you're on your own like 5 yard line, it'd be one thing because they could score a touchdown and beat you. Anywhere outside your own like 15, 20 yard line, fourth and anything a yard or less, go for it. Win the game. Once again, Bruce Arians. Coach is scared, tries to hope. It's just, you ever see The Departed? Remember like one of the early lines in The Departed, Nicholson's character, he says, no one's going to give it to you. You got to take it. Fourth and one, ball's in your hands. Get a yard and you're done. We can all go home. They kick it again. And by the way, that field position you were so worried about, the Giants getting, if you missed it, the 31-yard line, the Giants took 4 plays to cross that point on the field after we punted it to them. This field position thing is way the hell overrated. Having the ball is the most important thing, and keeping the ball and scoring, those are the most important things. Not, oh, let's play field position. Not in the NFL today. You can get 15, 20 yards at a time, no problem. Both the Bucs and Giants did it on Sunday. So we punted on fourth and one, when 1 yard would have won the game. Giants got the ball back, you know the rest. And it just, I mean, again, it boggles my mind. Like, it boggles my mind how you could preach all this aggressiveness, no risk it, no biscuit, blah, 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 and then do something like that not only one time but two times. Two separate times, a gain of 2 yards or less, and in one case, a gain of 1 yard, would have won the game and we would have been 2-1. And so they blew the game. And not because of anything the players did. That was something. And like Thomas Bassinger wrote a great part about it in the Tampa Bay Times. And I will quote what he said here real quick, because it was so spot-on accurate, I figured it wasn't even worth paraphrasing. I might as well quote it all together. He says, look around the NFL. You can't play afraid. In Kansas City on Sunday, Ravens coach John Harbaugh knew field goals weren't going to be enough to beat the Chiefs and went for it on fourth down 4 times, converting 3 of them leading to touchdowns twice. Eagles-Falcons. Eagles did it. Went for a 4th-and-4 and scored a touchdown that would have been the game winner, but the Falcons came back and scored also on a 4th down that they went for. And the most important thing he said, and this is about Bruce Arians, quote, "Arians chose to leave the game up to his kicker. This loss is on the head coach, and it reveals a startling lack of preparation and exposes irrational decision-making. A team should know before the game how it is going to approach 4th downs. Didn't Arians hand over play calling to offensive coordinator Byron Leftwich so that he could focus on better managing of game situations? And what happened to the man who lives by the mantra of no risk it, no biscuit?" I mean, it's absolutely true. Like, that's not even something we're like, oh, damn, we got to call a timeout and talk this over. Bruce Arians should know well before. I mean, again, there's numbers that have been printed out and studied. We know all this stuff by now. And he should know, okay, if we come up in this situation, we're going to do that. And maybe he does, and maybe his decision's to not go for it, and he didn't have to think about it. But even so, that's even worse. I'm really upset about, okay? Like, let me just tell you. We've all been at this a long time. If you're listening to this show, like I said, you're a big Bucks fan. And it's not like the Bucks have won anything in the past few years, so you're not some bandwagon jumper. You've been at it for a while, probably. I know I go back all the way to the, you know, like I said, the inception of the franchise, practically. Say for the first couple years before I was born. So, I've seen a lot of Bucks losses, and you win some, you lose some, and obviously it's been more frustrating the past decade with no success. But this one on Sunday hurt more than any Bucks loss in a long, long time. I tweeted about it after the game. You know, the Bucks have been so bad for so long, and they've had nothing really going for them for so long, that even though there have been bad losses, they don't really hurt. They don't cut to the core. You know, when you're in a season where you're 4-7 or whatever and it's week 13 and you lose, that sucks, but like whatever. You know, you weren't going to the playoffs anyway. So I can't say those hurt that bad, even though I don't like it. This one really, really hurt. And it was that disappointment type of hurt. Like not just, oh man, I can't believe we lost. Like just really disappointed in the team for allowing something like that to happen that never should have happened. The Bucks now are 20-3 all time when they have an 18-plus point lead at the half. Besides this one, I'll give you a second because if you're a real hardcore Bucks fan, you may be able to name the other two. One of them is really obvious, and the other one I remember specifically. If you go back, one was in the 2000s and one was in the 90s. I'll give you a second, okay? Okay, one was the Colts game on Monday night in 2003. We all remember that one. The Bucks led by, I think it was 21 at halftime in that game. I can't remember exactly what, but they led by more than 18. And the other one was in 1992 where the Bucks blew a 27-3 lead to the Rams at the old Sombrero. That was on Sunday Night Football on ESPN and ended up losing 31-27. And I remember that one specifically because it was in the days of blackouts. The game didn't sell out. It was not on TV. I was so disappointed. I was 12. And like I've told you before on this show, I grew up in an era when the Bucks didn't even sniff the playoffs. I mean, I didn't even know what a playoff game was. Didn't play ever on Monday Night Football. That didn't happen until I was in college. Like, just the odd once or every 1 or 2 year Sunday Nitro game on TNT or the ESPN Sunday Night Football was a huge deal. I used to get so excited, like, oh my God, my team's going to be on TV for the whole country. Everyone's going to get to see it. I went to a few of those, but that Rams game in 92 I didn't go to. So I stayed up on Sunday night. You know, it doesn't start till 8. I was 12. I had school the next day. It didn't matter. There's no way I would ever go to bed during a Bucks game, even at age like 9. But I remember the Bucks playing in that game. I had the game on the radio, okay? Like, I had Gene Deckerhoff on the radio at my house up in North Tampa listening to the game on a Sunday night. Like, it's like 11 o'clock at night. I remember my mom's in bed. Like, I'm just sitting there alone listening to the Bucks on the radio. This is what I did when I was a kid. And they blew that 27-3 lead and lost 31-27. And you know, I don't know if maybe you guys can relate to this. You know, I was a procrastinator. I'm still a procrastinator to this day. And I remember, like, I had homework and stuff due the next day, and I was like, blew it off because I was so geeked about the Bucks game, I couldn't focus. Why I had homework on a weekend, I have no idea, by the way. Kids shouldn't have homework on weekends. But anyway, I had stuff to do, and I was like, well, whatever, I'll just knock it out after the game. I'm already going to be wired from the game. You know, this is my 12-year-old brain thinking this. And then the Bucks blew that lead, and I had the prospect of like an hour of homework at like midnight on a Sunday night and then a whole week of school coming up. Just the worst feeling in the world at that point. And you're like, as a 12-year-old, you know, and you don't have a lot of perspective yet. Like, I think that was probably the worst I ever felt. Like, when the Bucks blew a 27-3 lead on Sunday Night Football, and the game ended, and I had homework due and had to be in school, like, 8 hours later on Monday morning. That awful feeling. Awful at that point in my life. So I remember the two other times this has happened. Hopefully, my son won't remember what happened on Sunday, even though we watched it. But anyway, as far as Matt Gay goes, and I haven't even mentioned Matt Gay yet, really, because I don't think he's as important to all this as you guys do. You know, he did make... I know he missed two extra points, but he did make some tough field goals, too. I'm not making excuses for him. I'll just say this much about the whole delay of game thing. I didn't think anything of it at the time because I just, in my mind, thought it was just so already over that I'm like, oh, yeah, whatever, 34, 44, whatever, Gale hit it. You know, I didn't even think about it. It just didn't even register. But looking back, I mean, that's obviously a terrible decision as well. And for Bruce Arians, if he thinks he needs to make a kick easier by taking penalties, if that's what he thinks he has to do when he has kicks lined up, you obviously have the wrong kicker. And when they kicked that stupid-ass field goal that I just talked about on 4th-and-2 from the 5-yard line, for that one, I don't remember Bruce Arians taking a delay game penalty for that one for some reason. Then it was okay to kick a 30-something yard or 20-something yard field goal. But for this one, we got to make all these special accommodations and get in everybody's head and make a big production out of it. And then he missed the kick, of course. Unbelievable. And I will say one more thing about it. Okay, because it keeps popping up. The whole, yep, Bucks being Bucks, losing culture, blah, blah, blah. Can we stop with that, okay? This isn't a culture thing. People try to assign curses like the kicking curse or the Bucks have a losing culture. I mean, I think the Bucks do have a losing culture, but it's not because of some, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Some narrative about how... So-and-so, like, they didn't lose this game because of how bad they were last year or 2 years ago or 3 years ago or 4 years ago. That's a narrative. They lost this game because they did not go for a 4th-and-2 that would have won in the game and then had another chance and a 4th-and-1 and didn't go for that either. That's why they lost the game. And they lost because Matt Gay missed a kick because he could have made the kick and all those things still would have been true. That's it. Matt Gay's not carrying the weight of past Bucks losses on his shoulders when he trots out on the field to kick a field goal. And Bruce Arians isn't carrying the weight of past Bucks failures on his shoulders when he decides to kick a field goal for no reason when he could win the game with a 1st down for less than 2 yards. So, culture this, culture that, whatever, man. It just, you know what it is? It's just really disappointing. So with all that said, and the reason I say this is because they're 1-2. If we've learned nothing else from watching sports over all these years, we've learned that what you think you know in 1 week will be completely different in a matter of a week or two later, let alone a month or two later. And so people, after anything that happens in week 3, who want to say, season over this, can't come back from that, blah, blah, blah. Hey, man, they go to L.A. and win, they're 2-2. And like I told you before the Giants game, I mean, that was a really, really big opportunity for them against a team that's not that good to get a win before they embark on what's going to be a real tough stretch of schedule coming up. But the fact remains that they can be 4-4 after this stretch coming up where they're on the road and don't play again at Raymond James Stadium until, what is it, late October? Or no, it's actually November, I think. November 10th, the next time they play at home. You know, if they can be 4-4 coming into that, the schedule does lighten up quite a bit after this coming up stretch. So you got the Rams on the road. I don't think being on the road is a big deal out there. Got the Saints without Drew Brees on the road. You've got London with the Panthers, and they're playing a backup quarterback as of right now, and the Bucs already beat them. You've got on the road at Tennessee, who's not very good. And yeah, the Seahawks on the road, that's going to be tough. But that gets you to week 9, that's 8 games. You can still be 4-4 after that stretch. You got to go now 3-2 to do it instead of 2-3 to do it, which would have been really nice to have that Giants win. But it's not, like, out of the ordinary. Like, you couldn't possibly be 4-4 through that stretch. So, those are the only things I'll say about it all right now. You know, looking at the Rams game, looking at the injury report right now, let's check that out real quick because the Bucs have been dealing with some stuff this week at practice. Vita Vea had been out. He did practice today. Again, I'm recording this on early Thursday afternoon. So, Vita Vea was out there this morning. Greg Allman tweeted that out. And looks like he's back to normal. And even when he wasn't out, but he was like going without his helmet, whereas everybody else was in their stuff the other day, he's fine. I don't think it's a big deal with Vea. Ryan Jensen, though, still not out there as of today. Neither is Chris Godwin. Official injury report with, like, body parts and descriptions and all that stuff comes out later on today. And with the Rams being on the West Coast, theirs will come out even later. So we'll see, but that's a bit of an issue right now. Bucks are definitely dealing with more than the Rams are injury-wise as they get set for that one. I do like, if there's nothing else, I like the fact that the Rams are coming off a Sunday nighter on the road. Maybe that helps a little bit. I have to check some Vegas historical trends and things like that. I should start giving out the trends I do see on this show to help you out, because there's a couple people I follow. Like, there was one this week, and this is one reason why I don't bet ever against the Bucks, and I actually don't usually bet for them either, because I just don't like having that baggage. As you could see Sunday, there's already plenty of baggage watching a Bucks game as a fan. I don't need gambling baggage with it. But coming off of, and I know these, some of these get real specific, but they do ring true. I had read earlier last week that coming off of a road division win, when a team was an underdog in that game of more than 6 points, which describes the Bucks' win at Carolina, road division win, and they were underdogs by more than 6 points. Then when those teams come back the next week, they were something like, you know, 50-180-5 all time against the spread, or going back 20, 30 years, not all time. Like, it's a letdown situation after a big division road win when you're the underdog. And the Bucks looked like they were plenty okay to not just win but cover in the early parts of the game and even into the second half, but they did not cover or win, as we could see. So I don't know what the trends say about Sunday night teams coming off, especially when it's cross-country, like the Rams went to Cleveland, and maybe there's some help there. I'm really not sure. Email me if you want to. BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com is the email address. Twitter, you can find me at BobbyGameDay. So one other thing I wanted to say, this just came out before I started to record the show here real quick, is it looks like in the ongoing CBA negotiations between the players and the league that the owners are now backing off of their 18-game schedule request. It looks like they can't get enough support for it, not just from players, but even amongst themselves. It looks like the support for it is more tepid than originally believed. And now 17 is what they're shooting for, with a subsequent reduction in preseason games either by one, which would make it three, and keep the total number of games altogether at 20, which it already is, or even cut them by two preseason games and just go into a 17 regular two pre formula. But either way, it looks like 17 is the new thing they're going to go after, and maybe it's something they had in mind all along and they started at 18 knowing it'd get poo-pooed and it would make them look like 17 is a compromise, and I don't know. But the point is, 17, as most of you probably know, I'd like to think our listenership is good with this type of stuff, is an odd number, okay? So that means you'd have some teams with 9 home games and some teams with 8 home games and playing an extra road game. I don't think they would do that for competitive fairness. I think it'd be 8 home, 8 road, and 1 neutral. So now we're looking at, again, if this is a real thing that they actually are proposing, it's not official yet. Now we're looking at everybody playing a neutral site game, probably a lot more Europe games. And the neutral sites could be Mexico City, they could be Europe. They could be, I mean, who the hell knows? It could be even other places besides that. NFL's looking for that dollar all over the globe, baby. But it's still, I mean, to me, it is better than 18. I don't like 18 games at all. I like it the way it is at 16. And it's been this way since my whole life. It was like 1978 they went to, right? Because the Bucks' first two seasons were 14 games each, 76 and 77. Then 78, they changed to 16. Yeah. So since 1978, it's been 16 games, and it has not deviated. And right now, we're still not sure if this is a real thing, but that is the latest report coming down. And if they did that, that means everybody would play a neutral site game. That would be 16 neutral site games a year. It's similar to my preseason proposal when I said play 3 preseason games, 1 home, 1 road, 1 neutral. Only now, I guess you'd be doing a regular season neutral one. And, you know, again, these London games, I get why they do them. Bucks have done a couple before. They'll do another one in a couple of weeks. The ones they did before were still 1 o'clock games, if I remember correctly. And they just played them London time at 6 p.m. or whatever it was. That way it was 1 o'clock here. This will be the first time the Bucks have ever had an a.m. kickoff Eastern time, if I'm not mistaken. So that's going to be kind of weird on that Sunday morning when we all wake up and the Bucks have a game like right then and there. And I'll probably love it with the games going on. And then after it's over and the Bucks don't have a 1 or a 4 o'clock game, maybe I'll feel differently. Although there'll be other games on. I think it'll be fun. I think it's like a fun novelty thing. I wouldn't want to do it all the time. And people that live on the West Coast, this is how they live their life. You know, we have 1 p.m., 4 p.m., and that's been ingrained into my brain Sundays during the fall, 1 p.m., 4 p.m., ever since I was a child. They have 10 a.m., 1 p.m. I can't imagine it being like 8 o'clock at night and everything's over. Like, to me, and I've been to the West Coast to visit a few times. I've never lived there. I don't think I've ever been to the West Coast during football season, though. It's always been usually during the summer. So I've never experienced, like, Sunday night football starting at 5:30, and then by 9 o'clock, you're done. Like, I know that when I've been out there before in the past, it has been late at night, like 10 p.m., which is when I like to watch. I love watching sports that late. And I'm sitting there like, what? Like, there's nothing. Like, everything's over. Like, everything in the whole country is over at 10 p.m. And I felt the void. If you're a late night guy like I am, you'll feel it too. But I think 9:30 could be fun. That'll be a fun week, you know, when we play the Panthers in a couple weeks. No need to worry about that right now, though, because, again, on tap is the Rams. This is a team that obviously poses some issues. They've got a very good passing attack. They're led by Jared Goff. Actually, let's be honest, they're led by Sean McVay. Have you guys watched Jared Goff, like, quarterback? I did not think he was going to be good when he came out. I was like, ah, this guy's got bust written all over him. He didn't even know the sun rose in the east and set in the west. Remember that from Hard Knocks when the Rams were on it? And he, like, didn't realize that that was a thing. Like, the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. Not that that determines necessarily what kind of a quarterback you'll be, but, I mean, come on. Right? But it wasn't just that. I didn't feel like he had the chips. And so now, obviously, they've been to a Super Bowl. They didn't win it, but they've been there, and on and on and on. You watch it, Jared Goff just stand there in the shotgun with, like, this blank expression on his face and just looking to the sideline waiting for McVay to figure it out so he can radio it into him. Like, that's what they do. And you know what? It works because Sean McVay's amazing. So, I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't work. But, I mean, Jared Goff personally does not scare me. And, you know, they'll dink and dunk. I mean, they don't go downfield a ton, but they'll try and sort of lull you to sleep until they do. And, you know, they do have weapons. Obviously, Todd Gurley has yet to crack 100 yards this year in three games. Came close against Carolina, I think, in week one. Cooper Kupp, quietly one of the better receivers in the NFL. I mean, it's going to be a test, no question about it. But I think the Bucs have a good chance to go play well this weekend. I really do. And I don't think these things carry over as much as people say they do. I don't think they're less likely to win because of what happened against the Giants or anything like that. I think that's way overrated. But they certainly are up against it right now, because if you're one of those people holding out hope that this could be one of those years the Bucs actually contend for something, and you never know for sure. It wasn't for me before the season. Then I got excited after the Carolina game and then what happened Sunday. But 1-3 wouldn't be a good look for any of that. And so you got your work cut out for you when you go up against the 3-0 Rams team, who is coming off of a Super Bowl appearance. It'll be a 4:05 kickoff. Again, Joe Bucks Fan has you covered. I mean, it's got everything. This is the best place on the internet for Bucks coverage. It's actually the best place anywhere, internet or non-internet, for Bucks coverage. Tons of articles, tons of updates every day. Follow him on Twitter at Joe Bucks Fan and all that good stuff. So I'll take it from here, and we'll take it in for the day. And I just want to thank all you guys for listening. I want to encourage all you guys mainly right now, okay? Hold the line, okay? Don't start this pity party. We suck. Losing culture. Same old Bucks. The Bucks will let me down until I die. Cut that crap out, okay? We're not the ones playing the games. So I don't think our mental state necessarily dictates how well the team does or doesn't do. But I don't think it's helpful. I really don't think it's helpful as a fan base or as a community, with every time the Bucks do something stupid or terrible, and Sunday was stupid and terrible, okay? But every time that happens, we don't need to come back, oh, the same old Bucks. Wow, this is how it's going to be. It's always, you know, stop that defeatist crap. It sucks. Shake it off. As a fan, I'm saying, shake it off. Get excited for Sunday afternoon. Like I always tell you, use it as an excuse. Have people over to your house. Get together with buddies. Whatever it is you're going to do. But no matter what you do, okay, have a great, safe weekend. Got a big slate of high school football Friday night. Got a big slate of college on Saturday. Although it's kind of so-so this week. And, of course, the NFL Sunday. Any weekend of football is a great, great weekend. I'll be back next week. Thanks to our sponsors at Bill Curry Ford, Sean Sullivan, my good friend. Tell them Joe Bucks Fan sent you and get the Joe Bucks Fan discount. Thanks to the Joes for giving me this platform to be in front of all of you. I'm Bobby Fenton. That is the free stretch for week four of the 2019 season. Hopefully next time I talk to you, the Bucks will be 2-2. But no matter what, wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.